Hello and welcome to the last ever edition of the Liverpool Life weekly podcast of this academic year. I'm Laura Gilchrist and I'm going to be bringing you all the top stories this week as well as a sports roundup and what's on in the city. As I said, it's the final edition of the podcast this year, but you don't need your hankies yet. We've got a lot of great news that's been going on in the city to talk about. Coming up on the programme, we'll be talking about the ugly rivalry and shocking behaviour between Liverpool and Manchester United fans during their Europa League match on Thursday. And as homelessness in Liverpool escalates, we've been asking whether you agree with the council's move not to give money direct to beggars on the street.
My friend like has this like charity that she does, which is helping the homeless. And she tends to give out like blankets and food instead of money.
Plus, we went to find out about charity runner Lee Quinn's latest marathon attempt.
The first 3 days are going to be equivalent to a marathon, equivalent to climbing up and down Snowdon in one stage at approximately 3 times.
But first, Alex Gorton is here to give us the latest about the Liverpool versus a Man United match.
Manchester United and Liverpool drew 1-1 in Europa League last 16 second leg at Old Trafford, which saw Liverpool go through 3-1 on aggregate. However, Liverpool's victory was overshadowed after 5 men were arrested following ugly scenes between rival Liverpool and Manchester United fans. Fights broke out and a flare was lit towards the end of the game as Liverpool fans celebrated their side's win over their arch rivals. A minibus window was also smashed. Greater Manchester Police confirmed 4 Liverpool fans and 1 Manchester United fan were arrested. The scuffles took place in the top tier of the East Stand when a handful of Liverpool fans who were sat among home supporters unfurled a club flag over the balcony, much to the delight of the visiting supporters below them. Stewards and police moved in swiftly to isolate the group to prevent a further escalation after a few punches were aimed at them by home fans. Tensions were already high when an offensive banner with the word murderers was unfolded on a bridge over the M602 in Salford, just a couple of miles from Old Trafford and a route used by many Merseyside-based supporters heading to the game. It also contained the date of the Hillsborough disaster in which 96 Liverpool fans died. The match was also blighted by a minority of fans taunting each other over the respective historic tragedies of each club, with chants about the Hillsborough tragedy from United supporters and a number of Liverpool fans chanting Munich in reference to the 1958 air disaster in which 8 Manchester United players and 3 club officials died. Both clubs face UEFA action. A number of offensive chants in reference to the Hillsborough tragedy were sung by a large section of Manchester United supporters at the first leg of the tie in Anfield last week. Manchester United condemned the chants, but UEFA took no disciplinary action as no reference was made in the match officials' reports. I'll be back later with a full roundup of this week's sports news.
Thanks for that, Alex. For more details on that story, go to www.jmu-journalism.org.uk and read Matt Crosby's article about the match. The budget has been announced this week, with the Chancellor implementing quite a few changes. This is the 8th budget George Osborne has announced during his time as Chancellor. Here's a few of the main changes that will affect Merseyside. A £161 million investment has been confirmed to accelerate upgrades to the M62 between Liverpool and Hull. However, the Chancellor has come under criticism between the imbalance of money spent on major projects in London compared to the North. Mayor Jo Anderson is amongst one of the critics by saying there's a lack of desire to rebalance the economy of the UK at the speed that's required. There are other plans proposed to improve the infrastructure of the Northern Powerhouse, with the HS2 debate in full force between Mayor Jo Anderson and Manchester City Council Chief Executive Howard Bernstein. They were in talks in Cannes this week with the Mayor discussing how missing this opportunity to get this rail network link would be regretted for many years. A Shakespeare Theatre is set to be introduced into Prescott. Osborne has confirmed that government funding will be available for a 350-seat Playhouse Theatre and University College as part of his budget. Knowsley Council leader Andy Moorhead thinks this will put Prescott on the international map and bring a £10 million boost to the local economy. I spoke to LJMU Literature and History Professor Elspeth Graham to see what she thinks about this new proposal.
It's amazing on all sorts of levels. The plans that we've got aren't just for a theatre. There will be a reproduction theatre inside a new theatre, but there's also a big educational strand to the project and a big community strand to the project. So it's going to make an enormous difference to the whole of Prescott and Knowsley, and we hope the North West.
Why do you think that has been chosen to be put in place in Prescott?
Well, because it's a massive regeneration project. Prescott is a town, it's a lovely town, it's a pretty town, but it's had some hard times lately. And there's quite a lot of deprivation in the borough of Knowsley. But the theatre, because it has so many aims, and will act as part of a Shakespeare triangle in England, if you think of London and Stratford-on-Avon, and then the borough of Knowsley creates a triangle in England. And so we're expecting it to attract a lot of visitors to come up here and be part of the whole visit to Liverpool and the Merseyside region. And that, in turn, will stimulate new businesses. And so it's really a kickstart to regenerating the whole town and, beyond that, really the whole borough.
It's also the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare coming up on St George's Day.
Yeah, that's
right. So it's good news for all Shakespearean fans, isn't it, really?
It's fantastic news. And just before the Shakespeare anniversary on the 23rd of April, we're expecting the planning permission result to come out a few days before that. And fingers crossed, if all goes well and we get the planning permission, that's also a wonderful anniversary present.
Indeed, yes. Do you know much about the University College campus that's going to be put in place in Prescott as well?
Yes, part of the whole sort of building is going to be to do with educational spaces round the theatre. And we're going to run an MA in Shakespearean practice from that base. And it's going to, we hope, bring people from all over the world to come and study Shakespearean practice, because there isn't actually a dedicated Shakespearean acting practice course in the UK. So that's going to be part of what's going on there. And the Chancellor's money, which is so fantastic that we heard about on Budget Day, is part of the funding. We've also had £6 million that Knowsley Borough Council have committed to the project. They announced that a week before the budget. There's a little bit more funding we have to get, but with those two enormous amounts of money, we're really on the way, and I think we can hope it will happen in the next couple of years.
So do you think that George Osborne's done enough to back the Northern Powerhouse?
Well, obviously, from our point of view, people who are involved in the Shakespeare North project, it's fantastic. I think there's still a way to go in Northern Powerhouse, and perhaps particularly in Merseyside, and I think actually over in Yorkshire as well. There's still a long way to go to get rid of that north-south divide that's still there, I think, in the country.
That was Elspeth Graham talking to me about the new opportunities Prescott faces thanks to the new budget proposal. Have your say about the new budget announcement and tweet us at JMU Journalism.
The latest Liverpool Life is out now. The team has pulled together another great package and it's ready to view.
News,
sport,
features,
reviews,
entertainment.
Pick up a free copy from our friendly reception staff at the Redmond's building on Brownlow Hill. But if you can't get here, don't worry. You can read it online anytime on your laptop, desktop, tablet or smartphone. And it's not only free, but like all our multimedia content, it's completely ad-free. That's right, there are no pop-ups, ad banners, pre-roll ads, sign-ups, free trials, nothing. Just great content at your fingertips anytime you want it. All you need to do is type in your browser jmu-journalism.org.uk. Then click the link in the right-hand column of the homepage, read all about it, and it'll take you right there to the latest edition. If it's happening in Liverpool, it's in Liverpool Life. Out now.
And moving on now, Liverpool councillor Frank Hunt announced this week that instead of giving money to homeless people, money should be given to recognised charities in order to make more of a difference. His comments came after receiving a letter from a member of the public who was called for a wider understanding of the homeless issue. Liverpool Life reporter Noor Ali has more on this.
Liverpool Council has launched a campaign to tackle the growing problem of homeless people in the city. The homeless problem in Liverpool has increased, and there has been huge public support and requests to the council to do more in terms of getting people off the streets and into a safe and warm environment. Councillor Frank Hunt has said that instead of giving cash to beggars, people should make direct donations to recognised charities in order to make a real difference. His advice follows in response to Sarah Phillips, who wrote a letter describing her experience of speaking to a 25-year-old man whose fingers were completely mangled as a result of sleeping rough for 6 months. The organisation Change will work with the Whitechapel Centre and the Liverpool Bid Company to help improve the city's homeless services. The campaign hopes to tackle the misconception that everyone begging or sleeping rough is homeless and vice versa. We spoke to Ruth McCauley, the fundraising manager at the Whitechapel Centre.
We're not telling people what they should do with their money at all. We don't want to tell people what to do with their money. But obviously, you know, we're an organisation that helps people for a long term. We want to change people's situations and we want people to come off the streets.
The aim is to work in partnership with the public to achieve a longer term, greater good for the individual. As mentioned before, there has been significant public support for tackling the homeless problem, and last week more than 100 people showed up showing their support during a public march in memory of a man called Simon who died after several months of sleeping rough on the streets. We also took to the streets of Liverpool to find out what the public think.
It's like an organisation because you don't really know what they're going to spend it on, whereas like if you give it to an organisation like you can get food and maybe like accommodation for a night or something like that. So
to them, yeah, because charities they take a chunk out of the money, don't they? So yeah, rather give it to a homeless person.
I'm very cynical, and sometimes I don't know whether it's people who are just dressing up in that way or whatever. So I think if I sort of channel it through a charity, you know, then that's where it's going to.
A charity or an organisation. Okay. Yeah, my friend like has this like charity that she does, which is helping the homeless, and yeah, she tends to give out like blankets and food instead of money. So yeah, I tend to give it to a charity. I'd still help out like homeless people by giving them like what they need instead of money, because I don't know where that money's going.
I think I'd probably prefer to give it to a charity or an organisation. I don't think that they would use the money in a responsible way. They'd probably just use it for alcohol or drugs. I know that's how a lot of people who take drugs get their money.
The council says it plans to accommodate up to 700 people in the future. Anyone concerned about someone sleeping rough can call No Second Night Out on 0300 123 2041 or email the Whitechapel Centre.
That was Noor Ali talking to us about the growing homeless problem in Liverpool. And don't forget to let us know your thoughts on this matter. Should people stop giving money to beggars on the street? Tweet us at JMU Journalism.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, follow us on Twitter at JMU Journalism and come back often.
A man from West Kirby is preparing to take on the world's toughest foot race across the Sahara Desert. Lee Quinn will be racing in the marathon disabled next month and will be conducting parts of his training regime at Liverpool John Moore's Tom Riley building. James Knowles went down to see what was going on earlier this week.
During his training, Lee will be running in a heat chamber, which is used to replicate the desert conditions. I went down to the Tom Riley building to see how the training was going on and what the race entailed.
160 miles across Morocco, the Sahara Desert, and it's broken down into stages. So your first 3 days are going to be equivalent to a marathon. Equivalent to climbing up and down Snowdon in one stage approximately three times or something like that. And then you've got a long stage, and on your long stage it's going to be approximately 52 miles in the one go, and then you've got another marathon the following day after your rest day, and then at the end of it, just this isn't part of the race, but they make you do a 17k charity run for UNICEF at the end of it, so it's not part of the race, but you've got to do it, otherwise you get fined. And it's all at stages, they're all timed, so you have to beat, there's two camels that follow you in the race, if they catch you up, you're out the race, or if they have to give you fluids throughout, you get a time penalty and it's all timed, etc. So you can't literally carry in your own.
Well, that's what I'll be carrying.
You can feel the weight of that running across the desert and things like that. So you can you'll get a feel of what you're running across, and as I say, it's across sand dunes and in temperatures up to about 50 centigrade as well. So it's a bit of a challenge, really. But you sleep out in the desert, so I've got my sleeping mat. I'm a sleeping bag there, so that's my mat. I've got a small one just to cover up to my bum, just to save on weight. And I've got my sleeping bag in there as well, so you literally sleep out in a bivouac, which is literally just like a sheet over your head. There's no sides to it. You have to have a mandatory kit, like an anti-venom kit. You pump and all that, because there are scorpions and snakes and things like that, so you have to have that type of stuff, as well as your compass and a little knife. So, yeah.
What else will you be taking in your bag?
It's mainly going to be food, water. I'll be wearing the one set of clothes for the whole week. I've got two pairs of socks. There's mandatory like snake venom kit, and just some little bits and bobs like toothbrush, toothpaste. You get up to 12 litres of water given to you each day, and you'll be given water at each checkpoint throughout each day. So when you reach a checkpoint, you'll be given water. And you're given salt tablets, because obviously dehydration is the biggest worry out there. And you have to be taking your salt tablets, on the hour to make sure that your salts are kept in there, otherwise you can get into serious trouble.
I also spoke to Dr. Ben Edwards about his role in the training.
I'm an environmental physiologist and senior lecturer at Liverpool John Moores University. So basically my job is to damage limitate people who want to go to funny environments where they are in jungle or in desert or altitude, that kind of thing. Stop them hurting themselves, really, and adapt them as best we can in this cosy environment that we live in, which is the United Kingdom, as opposed to that mad environment that is the desert, for instance. Yeah, so Lee's been in today, and basically what we've done is we've unfortunately made him wear a Rexall thermometer, and we've measured core temperature, and we've progressively increased his core temperature promote adaption. So we promoted it, we've pushed it by exercising and putting him in an environmental chamber, and we progressively increased it to about 38.5 degrees, and then he'll come in again and we'll push it a little bit higher, etc., and he'll get a good adaption, and he'll have an ability to lose heat quicker than most people would, which will be great in the desert for him. So Lee's going to be in here for the next 3 weeks, so for an hour every three times a week.
Will the training be the same each week? Or?
So what we'll progressively do is we'll increase the speed he's running at to replicate what he wants to do on the sand. We'll increase the mass in the backpack that he's got. And then we'll increase the temperature to about 40 degrees. It's a progressive strain on his body, which he'll be able to recover from. And then when he goes out to Morocco, he'll be fit for purpose.
After the first session, Lee seemed very happy with the progress that has been made.
It was fine, yeah, it wasn't too bad. I'm a lot fitter than I was 10 months ago when I originally did that session. And, I think my training's gone really well so far. It wasn't too bad, other than the obvious, the temperature thing. But other than that, everything else was fine.
Lee will be running for charity, with all proceeds going to Neuroblastoma UK. He chose the charity after a family friend's child was diagnosed with the disease, and he expressed his delight with how much has been donated.
Well, I had to target 5,000, and I've currently got 6,100 raised, so I'm really pleased with what's gone on there. And I have to thank the people who I work with, 2020 Legal, because they've recently just made a massive donation of £3,000, so I was really grateful for that.
Anyone who would like to donate to Lee's efforts can do so on www.justgiving.com/LeeQuinn03.
That was James Knowles reporting on Lee Quinn's preparations for his marathon in April. Coming up, we have a tribute to the famous Mickey Finn, whose funeral took place earlier this week. But before that, work on a multi-million pound construction site had been halted after a number of World War II bombs were found earlier this week on Monday and Tuesday. 7 World War II devices were discovered on Pall Mall, leading workers on the construction site and other local businesses to be evacuated. Kate Hewison has the latest.
On Monday, bomb disposal units on the scene unearthed 2 artillery shells which were dealt with by a bomb disposal robot. The following day, 5 more World War II devices were found, bringing the total to 7. A 200-metre cordon was set up and workers were evacuated as bomb disposal experts arrived to join fire engines, ambulances and a large number of police officers at the scene. The £90 million North Point development was set to be an 18-storey apartment block and labelled as a potential landmark gateway. However, work on the construction site will remain halted until more surveys have been made by bomb disposal officers. As well as local businesses, Merseyrail also faced disruptions early on Monday. However, the trains were back on track by early afternoon.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, bookmark jmu-journalism.org.uk.
Now, the Liverpool-born comic Mickey Finn passed away at the start of this month in a hospice near Crosby. Hundreds of tributes have poured in for Mickey and his family after the sad news. Reporter Matt Crosby has more details and a look back at some of his work.
The funeral of Liverpudlian comedian Mickey Finn took place in the city earlier this week. He passed away on the 3rd of March at the age of 69. Mourners gathered at St Anthony's Church on Scotland Road on Monday afternoon to celebrate the legacy of Mickey Finn, who was originally called Joseph Flannery. He'd been an iconic comedian in the city for years, and many famous faces paid their tributes by attending the funeral, including another famous funny guy in the city, Ken Dodd. Here's a look back at some of Mickey's finest work.
It doesn't matter what part of the country from, you have a rough pub, don't you? Love them rough pubs. Was it Monday the night? Kate Ailey was a stewardess. She had a pig on the bar as an air freshener. Went the wrong night, quiz night. The first question was, who are you looking at? The prize is an alibi for a fortnight. I was watching a fight and a poor match broke out. What about the little scout of Walters with fish and chip shop? £20 salmon under his arm. He went, hey lad, did you do fish cakes? He went, yeah. He said, can you do one for Thursday? It's his birthday.
The genius comic was much loved in the city amongst the public and fellow comedians, including Ricky Tomlinson and Frankie Allen. Mickey fell ill in November last year when appearing in Stan Bourbon's play Medals. He died on the 3rd of March at St Joseph Hospice in Thornton.
That was Matt Crosby there with a tribute to comedian Mickey Finn. You can send your tributes to at JMU Journalism. People in Southport are paying tribute to Sir Henry Seagrave, who broke the world's greatest land speed record in 1926. Events have been held throughout the month to mark the anniversary of when he broke the record. Adam Lawrence is here talking to me about it. So Adam, who is Sir Henry Seagrave and what has he achieved?
Well, Sir Henry was the man who broke the world's greatest land speed record of 152 miles per hour in 1926 in his 5-litre Sunbeam Tiger Ladybird vehicle. He was a former fighter pilot and he was the first person to hold simultaneous records in both land speed and water speed. After the Second World War, he became a racing car driver and won the French Grand Prix in 1923. He was also the first to travel at over 200 miles per hour in a land vehicle.
And what type of events have taken place so far in tribute to him?
Well, so far there have been a few family-friendly arts and crafts nights, mid-1920s film screenings and vintage fairs to celebrate Sir Henry's achievements. But the main event took place on Wednesday the 16th, which was the actual anniversary of the record. There was a reenactment of the record-breaking moment that took place on the same mile of Ainsdale Beach as the original record Sir Henry set. The red Sunbeam Tiger car was also at the beach, which hasn't been in the public eye since 2007.
And how was the turnout at the festival? Were there any special guests?
Yes, the turnout was pretty impressive. The people all over the region coming to celebrate Sir Henry's achievements. Members from the prestigious Sunbeam Talbot Dirac Vintage Car Club attended the event on Wednesday and drove about 20 different cars behind the Sunbeam Tiger Ladybird car on its victory mile. Sir Henry's great-nephew Stephen Seagrave also hosted a talk about his great-uncle, which took place at the Atkinson in Southport as well. The famous Super Red racing car will be left on display in the foyer of Atkinson until the 20th of March for people to go and have a look.
Thanks for that, Adam. Now to look at our sister paper Liverpool Life to see what else has been going on in the city this week. So I've got a copy of Liverpool Life here in front of me, and there are some cracking stories in it this week. This one here, Sophie Corcoran, has written a great story about National Apprenticeship Week that was taking place in Liverpool One this week. That's definitely worth a read. What else? Hannah Rogers also wrote a story about a Wallasey schoolgirl who's donated her hair to a charity specialising in making wigs for young people receiving chemotherapy. It's a very emotive and inspiring piece, and it's definitely worth a read as well. Barry Rocks has written a piece about a Liverpool community group who are trying to halt plans that are in place to build a dual carriageway through Rimrose Valley Country Park, as it's an area of natural beauty. And you can pick up a copy of Liverpool Life from the reception at Redmond's building on Brownlow Hill. Now to Alex Gorton with the sports news.
As I've already spoken about the controversy between Manchester United and Liverpool fans, now let's talk more in detail about the actual match itself. Philippe Coutinho's brilliant solo goal helped ensure Liverpool moved into the European League quarterfinals as they drew 1-1 with Manchester United at Old Trafford. The Brazil forward struck a sublime effort in first half injury time to leave the hosts needing to score three more times after Anthony Martial had given them hope from the penalty spot. There were further chances for Liverpool to win on the night, but they progressed into the last eight, 3-1 on aggregate. In boxing, Tony Bellew has agreed terms to fight for the WBC World Cruiserweight title on the 4th of June, and life could imitate art for the childhood Evertonian, with Goodison Park strongly tipped to be the venue. Bellew's promoter Eddie Hearn tweeted that he was delighted to announce they have agreed terms for Tony to fight Lunga Makabu for the WBC Boxing World title. It is just months since Bellew boxed at Goodison as an actor in the critically acclaimed movie Creed. Now he could be ready to do it for real against Makabu, a South African-based southpaw from Democratic Republic of the Congo. Makabu has a formidable record of 19 wins from 20 contests and 18 by KO, but the only name of any significance on his record was a 45-year-old Glenn Johnson dispatched in round 9 to win the WBC international title. In athletics, Merseyside under-15s girls took victory at the British Athletics Inter-Counties event, which incorporated the final stage of this year's cross-challenge series. With four to count, the Liverpool Harrier Quartet of Fay Island, Katie Miller, Jessica Cook and Ella McNiven continued their splendid winter with a resounding victory over renowned cross-country specialists Essex and Surrey. After narrowly missing out on a medal at the English School's Cross Country Championships, Fay Island went one better with a superb third place finish as the 14-year-old prepares for the school's international in Falkirk later this month. In basketball, two victories in 2 days saw Liverpool Basketball Club under-14s finish their season on a high. The young side played on consecutive days against the same opponents, Lanx Spinners Rosendale, winning both games to boost their chances of qualifying for the end-of-season playoffs. Liverpool's Division 2 side took on the East London All-Stars looking for victory in their pursuit of an end-of-season playoff place. However, Liverpool Basketball Club was beaten. The scores remained tied until the dying seconds when a three-point shot from the All-Stars put them in front. Liverpool, though, had four free shots to snare victory from the jaws of defeat. Despite all four shots being successful, LBC still went down 99-95. Next weekend sees the final roundup of games for Liverpool Basketball Club with the Division 2 side taking on Brixton Topcats. That's all your sports news. I'm Alex Gorton.
Thanks for that, Alex. And now for a look at what's on in Liverpool. Mattel Play is coming to the Albert Dock later this month with giant characters such as Bob the Builder and Fireman Sam. They've come to be a part of the new 13,000 square foot family entertainment centre in the Albert Dock. It's a great event for the entire family and tickets are on sale now for the grand opening on the 22nd of March. Comedian Bridget Christie is presenting her new show, A Book for Her, at the Everyman Theatre this spring, and it's starting on the 29th of March. The live performance is based on Christie's first book and there will be a signing of the book after the show. Now that St Patrick's Day festivities are done and dusted in the city, we now have St George's Day to look forward to, and there's a festival taking place to mark the 400th year since playwright William Shakespeare died. There will be reenactments of his famous plays like Macbeth, and the Royal Liverpool Court will have Shakespearean singers on its new terrace. The St George's Day Festival is on the 23rd of April until the 24th. The Playhouse is welcoming the play 39 Steps this April, and this comedy thriller features four fearless actors playing 139 roles in 100 minutes of fast-paced fun and thrilling action. Sounds a bit exhausting for me, but it's running from the 4th of April until the 9th, so there's plenty of time for you to book that. And finally, three-time Brit nominee and X Factor winner Alexandra Burke takes the stage at the Empire to perform as Rachel Marin in The Bodyguard. That's running from the 26th of April until the 7th of May. And that's it from me. This has been the last podcast of the year, but don't worry, this may not be the last you hear from the team, so check back to our website for more material later in the year. And don't forget, if you are missing us, you can still listen to all of our previous podcasts on the website too. And of course, the Liverpool Life team will still be posting all the latest news onto the website, so you can keep up to date with what's going on in the city at www.jmu-journalism.org.uk. There's some really great material on the website at the minute. A few of our sports journalists from our team went down to Marine FC in Crosby this week to report on their game against Buxton. They've also created some nice little videos about the match, so head to jmu-journalism.org.uk to check those out. It's been great fun producing these podcasts for you, and we hope you've enjoyed them. Thanks for tuning in, and so for the final time, I'll play you out to our jingle.
This has been the Liverpool Life podcast, brought to you by the journalism students at the Redmond's News Centre.